This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and welcome to the 100th episode of the USDF official podcast. It's already 2 years since our first podcast aired on October 31st, 2013, giving dressage enthusiasts the opportunity to stay connected to the American dressage community. And over the last 2 years, our segments have included excerpts from lectures that were first presented at the USDF annual conventions, plus our educational DVDs, as well as several interviews with riders, trainers, and judges on their experiences both inside and outside of the arena. Episodes have also included dressage news, information on the many USDF programs and awards, and of course we can't forget our American Dressage Legends series that honors the people who have supported and advanced the sport of dressage in the United States. These Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame inductees helped create the vision that the USDF carries forward today. We have listeners in the US, Canada, Australia, UK, Norway, Germany, New Zealand, Spain, and 45 other countries around the world. Our most popular episodes so far include topics on the sport horse, changes to the 2015 dressage tests, and the role of a technical delegate. And our most popular tips were riding the circle and designing freestyles. And as we mark this 100th episode, the USDF would like to thank all of our listeners wherever you are in the world, but also all of those who have lent their expertise to the podcasts. And we look forward to helping you stay connected to the American dressage community through these weekly programs. And coming up on this week's program, we continue that American Dressage Legends series as we reflect on the life of Dr. Max Gawler, who was inducted into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 2004, and who is featured in the November issue of the USDF Connection magazine. And later on in the program, in our lead up to this year's Adequan USDF Annual Convention, where we feature some of the presenters, we'll be hearing from Dr. Heather Farmer. And finally, in our education segment, we have the second part of the excerpt from the DVD Riding with the Vets with Dr. Hilary Clayton, who addresses the impact of arena footing on soundness. But first, we have just one item of news for you this week. The USDF has just announced that there will be two opportunities to attend an Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conference in 2016. That first conference, featuring Johan Hinnemann, will be held January 18th through the 19th at Mary Ann McPhail's High Meadow Farm in Loxahatchee, Florida. The second, which features Stephen Clark, will be held on March the 14th and 15th at El Sueno Equestrian Center in Somis, California. Both of these presenters bring a wealth of experience, of course, and knowledge to these conferences. And information on these trainers' conferences, including the criteria for attendance, is available on the education webpage at usdf.org. And now to our American Dressage Legends series, as we remember Dr. Max Gawler, who was inducted into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 2004 in recognition of his innovative contributions to the education of dressage riders in the U.S. His three books, entitled The Competitive Edge, Volume 1, Improving Your Dressage Scores in the Lower Levels, Volume 2, Moving Up the Levels, and Volume 3, Gravity, Balance, and Kinetics of the Horse and Rider, have sold tens of thousands of copies around the world. Dr. Gawler's creative, popular lectures on the local, regional, and national level have inspired thousands of dressage riders. His clinics have provided a firm foundation in the basics to many riders in the US. A medical doctor by profession, Max and his wife Doris came to the US from Switzerland in 1952. His equestrian career began in America. In the 1960s, he was one of a small group of visionaries who worked with Margarita Serrell to found the American Dressage Institute, the forerunner to the USDF. As a past president of ADA, he was instrumental in bringing outstanding European trainers to the US, including Colonel Hans Handler, Karl Mikolka, Nuno Olivieri, Herbert Ribein, and Rich Watchen. They taught at the ADA dressage camps in the 1960s at Skidmore College in New York. Max has been a very popular speaker all over the country, including his many presentations at the USDF University sessions at annual conventions. Some of his most recent lectures at the convention have been on the difference between classical and competitive dressage, the effects of coefficients on test results, the development and use of the snaffle bit through the ages, and human and horse kinetics and balance. Standing outside any of the meeting rooms when he's speaking, one is struck by the audience's delight, both through their applause and laughter. One of Max's passions is his personal study of the history of riding and the work of the old masters, which he reads in the original German and French. An avid scholar, he has an outstanding collection of antique riding literature, especially deep in literature from the Middle Ages. And it's this ongoing study of the literature that he brought to his teaching and lecturing. Max has given clinics for dressage riders all over the US. He has taught people across the entire spectrum, from the greenest training level children to experienced FEI level riders. Unlike many trainers, he has never shied away from teaching beginners or amateur riders, since his philosophy has been to give all riders a correct foundation. Max has an uncanny ability to break every moment into small increments that can be built upon to explain how to accomplish the task at hand. He cautions his students to treat horses kindly and fairly, always look for the good in people and horses, and reminds his students that dressage should always be fun. Always a gentleman, he never loses his patience with students. People who have taken a clinic with him invariably say that they left the arena feeling that they have accomplished something while having a good time doing it. They leave with the tools to continue to improve. Max has been a popular S judge for many years and has officiated at everything from international and US championships to small schooling shows. Throughout his equestrian career, his primary focus has been on the education of dressage riders. And again, you can find more information about Dr. Max Gawler in the November issue of the USDF Connection magazine. And now, Dr. Heather Farmer joins us to give us a sneak preview of what we can expect at this year's Adequan USDF annual convention when she addresses the topic of chiropractic and acupuncture for dressage horses. Heather, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
There are so many modalities to choose from.
There are. There's quite a few options and quite a different variety of ways to treat kind of the same concerns. And so I'll be talking about two specific modalities, acupuncture and chiropractic, and how it can relate to dressage horses specifically in increasing your performance and harmony within your test.
Why don't we begin, Heather, by you explaining a little bit about yourself and your business and why this is a focus for you?
Sure. I have my own practice in Orlando, Florida, and I work primarily on sport horses, both hunter jumper and dressage horses. And as I was starting to work with my jumpers originally and trying to make them more flexible and make their back stronger and make them use their bodies more correctly so they don't abuse or overuse their joints and tendons, I started looking at chiropractic and acupuncture. And then when I got into dressage about 4 years ago, I realized how important it is specifically for the dressage horse to help keep them completely relaxed and loose and in harmony so that they can continue the cadence that they need in order to, you know, get those correct movements and stuff as they're training.
So are you a rider yourself? So you have that perspective.
I am. I ride both. I still ride both hunters and dressage horses. I've switched and do more dressage than I do jumpers now as I've gotten a little bit older. But yes, I have a perspective both from the veterinarian side of it and watching the horses go on the sideline and also the feel of the horse as a rider. To be able to feel the difference and feel when, you know, your horse isn't quite in rhythm or quite right, so to speak.
Give us, if you would, Heather, a little introduction to both those therapies of chiropractic and acupuncture for those that are not familiar with them.
Sure. Acupuncture is an ancient Chinese medicine technique where we use small needles that are 30 gauge or less, so they're very small, and we insert them into acupuncture points that use basically the body's nerve pathway and lymphatic pathways in order to help the body correct any imbalances, whether it be contracted muscles or nerves that may not be firing as well as they should, or nerves that are just inflamed from overuse or misuse as you're trying to retrain in your body. It's all about using your horse's body and using the whole body to heal itself rather than just focusing on very specific parts of the body. And chiropractic is the use of a little bit of force to manipulate the horse's spinal column and axial skeleton in order to put any misaligned bones or joints back into place so that, again, you're focusing on using the entire body to help heal itself and put it back in alignment so that the horse can then move correctly, left side to right side or laterally or vertically. If you're asking, you know, an upper level horse to kind of come up into the bridle a little bit more, that's a different movement than, you know, you started with your training level horse where you've gotten them just round and over the back to build up muscle.
So give us an idea of what your presentation will be then. Do you have some case studies that you'll be presenting?
Yes, I've got some case studies, both specific acupuncture cases where we've had some muscle atrophy or some nerve damage that we'll be presenting. I've also got some chiropractic cases that are before and after the horses before we adjust them, and then what the pelvis and spine looks like, and then and the horse is moving, and then after the adjustment, re-looking at the horse's pelvis and spine, and then re-jogging them so that you can kind of see a little bit of the difference. And they'll be kind of major cases so that you can see the difference. They may not be the most subtle, you know, concerns, but certainly wanted everybody to get an idea of what is a valuable tool to be used and where the best, you know, areas and concerns for the that modalities to work.
Do you use conventional medicine, for example, with x-rays? Do you always x-ray before and after chiropractic treatment sessions?
No, we typically don't do x-rays before and after chiropractic treatments. Usually we just do it by feel and flexing the horse and manipulating each individual joint to try to find the ones that maybe aren't as flexible or maybe that are painful when you ask the horse to do certain things. But I do, you know, I do complement acupuncture and chiropractic with what we consider contemporary veterinary medicine. You know, I do radiographing, you know, joint injections, shockwave is another therapy that we use because I feel like there's a nice midline that we can combine all of those therapies and a time and place for all of them.
Have you found then, Heather, in your experience, that any one of those seems to be more pertinent to the dressage performance horse?
For me, I think chiropractic seems to be the one modality that consistently my clients feel they get the best benefit from. And, you know, if you think about it, if you've got, you know, part of your back that's not aligned and is causing muscle spasms secondary to not being aligned or causing a nerve to be pinched, certain movements that you do or certain ways that you twist, you know, are uncomfortable. And the same holds true, especially with the dressage horse, where we're very concerned about being symmetrical left to right and having, you know, the same amount of flexibility left to right, that those horses seem to benefit the best from that modality more so than maybe acupuncture on a general rule.
So does your examination and diagnosis begin with watching the horse at work?
Yes, if I can either watch them at work, or we will get them out and jog them, or maybe even put them on the lunge line so that they're on a little bit of a circle, because I want to watch them move freely and see if there's a shortening of the stride or not wanting to stretch and really push off the hind end, or if there's a specific movement where the horse holds its back and starts to get tense. And then that kind of helps me pinpoint the area that we're concerned with or the area that there might be some concern in.
And typically, what period of time would you need for a treatment program, if there is such a thing as an average for a dressage horse?
Typically, it takes about a month. In that period, we'll usually do two adjustments, sometimes three, depending on the severity of what we're working with, and also the level the horse is working at. But usually, you know, my goal is to try to get them healthy and keep them symmetrical. So once we adjust them, then we go through and discuss exercises or stretches that the owners can do on their own, specific movements that would be helpful to continue to keep the muscles loose so that the spine stays straight, and certain movements that maybe we should avoid for a period of time just until the horse is back in line and stays symmetrical.
Well, I was going to come to that, Heather, because many people now practice these carrot stretches, don't they? They've become very popular with the horses. The horses love them, but it does give you an idea of their flexibility. Is this something you advocate, or clearly you customize those stretching and other exercises you want the owner to do in between treatments?
I think every horse could benefit from doing the carrot stretches. Just the stretches alone basically give the owner something that they can actually try to increase the flexibility of the horse's neck or spine by using them. And you know, a horse that maybe can only stretch to its girth area, you know, in a couple months of doing them and getting flexible, it's kind of like us doing yoga for our own bodies. They can actually help me with treatments because they're actually increasing the flexibility of the horse. And then we do customize certain stretches for certain conditions or certain horses that are more stiff or are more reluctant to stretch. Then we'll either do them more frequently or we'll add a couple of different stretches to that program.
And then, of course, you will advise on their training program, presumably, and maybe movements to avoid during the treatment program.
Yes. Yeah. I try to encompass everything as far as stretches and the training, the level they're training at, and specific movements that may help them improve, you know, such as if they have a hard time, you know, bringing their right hind leg across their body, then potentially doing some leg yields more at the walk and just really focusing on getting it correct and making them stretch it, or do a couple more turn on the forehands where they have to cross that leg over, even whether they're, you know, on the ground or in the walk. We'll just help stretch that, and maybe we'll back off doing it at a trot, or that way, you know, we can retrain that muscle, get it stretched out without overexerting it and tiring it to the point where it gets tight and tense again.
Well, I'm sure it's going to be a very detailed presentation, and the title of which is what, Heather?
The title is Acupuncture and Chiropractic in the Dressage Horse.
Perfect. That's a great overview. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and giving us a teaser this week. We'll look forward to that presentation at this year's Adequan at USDF annual convention. Thank you so much, Heather.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it.
And now Dr. Hilary Clayton shares the final part of the excerpt taken from the DVD Riding with the Vet series, which is available through the online store here at the USDF. And the topic is the impact of arena footing on soundness.
We have to be concerned with factors that affect concussion. We've seen that speed plays an important role. When the horse is wearing steel shoes, that tends to exacerbate the effects of impact shock. But what we're really here to look at today is the effects of surface. And the property of the surface that determines the magnitude of the impact shock is its hardness or impact resistance. So, you know, there's a really easy way to look at the surface and kind of gauge how hard it is or how high its impact resistance is, and that's just to look at the surface after the horse has gone by and ask yourself, can I see footprints or hoofprints? And on a very hard surface, you won't see any hoofprints, whereas on a softer surface, the foot will dig into the footing or slide into the footing a little ways and leave a hoofprint after the horse goes by. Now, on hard surfaces that have high impact resistance, the foot is going to be decelerated very rapidly. These surfaces will be associated with high concussion, and we're talking now about surfaces like concrete, asphalt, or hard-packed clay, which is, you know, sometimes what some arenas end up being after they've been wet and then dried. Now, these hard surfaces do have a role to play in the lameness exam, when the veterinarian will actually use them to exacerbate the signs of certain types of lamenesses, particularly lamenesses involving the bones and the joints, like arthritic lamenesses. But this is not the surface that we'd be advocating you to go out and train on. Now, on the other hand, surfaces with a lower shear resistance, and shavings would be a really good example of this, to a lesser extent sand. These are the surfaces that are highly deformable. So when the horse treads on the surface, it leaves a much deeper hoof print. And these surfaces would be associated with lower concussion or lower impact shock. But as with everything else, you can go too far to the other extreme. You can have a surface that's too hard, but you can also have a surface that's too soft. And the analogy for that is that it would be like running on pillows. You would just keep endlessly sinking into the surface. Now, moving on to look at the other time in the stride when the characteristics of the footing are important. And we're going to talk now about the push-off phase, or the phase when the horse is generating propulsion to push his body up into the air and forward. And now, this is not the only muscle, but a lot of the responsibility for developing propulsion and push-off comes from the deep digital flexor muscle. And this muscle contracts in the later part of the stance phase. It's the muscle that causes the hoof to push against the ground to generate propulsion. But it needs to meet some resistance in order to be able to push off effectively. The deep flexor muscle, which we can see here, passes down behind the horse's knee. Then it has a very long tendon that goes down the back of the cannon bone, behind the fetlock, pastern, and coffin joints. So when this muscle contracts, it tends to flex the knee, the fetlock, the pastern, and the coffin joint. But during the stance phase, when the leg is sort of locked in extension, that muscle tends to pull the leg back and generate a force that pushes the body forwards over the horse's leg. So assuming that the ground has sufficient friction, that it doesn't just pull the foot over the ground, this is then a very important muscle for pushing the horse's body forwards. But because of the position and action of this tendon, it's also all the time trying to flex those joints, particularly the coffin joint. Now, if we have the horse working on a surface that allows the toe to dig into the surface, then tension in that deep flexor muscle will actually cause the toe to rotate into the surface a little bit. And that's a very important feature of our footing. And the reason is because if we have a footing that does not allow the toe to penetrate into it, then as the horse's body up here is rolling forward over this grounded hoof, then it's extending the fetlock, the pastern, and the coffin joints. And when those joints become highly extended, it puts tension on the distal check ligament, which attaches from the back of the cannon bone to the deep flexor tendon. And this acts like a sort of a rope almost, going from the back of the cannon bone down to the back of the coffin bone and running over the navicular bone and the navicular bursa. So when the toe is not able to penetrate into the surface, we get tension acting through the check ligament and then through this part of the deep flexor tendon to the hoof, and also putting pressure on the navicular region. So horses that have navicular problems or heel pain are often more lame on a hard surface, not only because of the increased concussion, but also because the toe can't penetrate into the surface as the hoof is pushing off. So the property of the surface that determines whether the toe is able to penetrate into the surface is the shear strength. And as we've just seen, if the surface does not allow the toe to penetrate in, then horses with check ligament problems, navicular problems, heel pain are going to be painful during this phase of the stride. Okay, so we can have a surface that has high shear strength. The toe is unable to penetrate into the surface. We can have a surface that has a moderate shear strength. And in this case, the toe is able to penetrate into the surface. But as the foot goes to push off, the surface still offers enough strength or enough shear strength that it gives the horse something firm to push off against. And that's the second sort of part of the shear strength equation. Now, we can go too far to the other extreme. We can have a surface in which the shear strength is too low. And these surfaces, certainly they allow the toe to dig in, but then as the horse is trying to push off against the surface, it gives way. And this is the feeling you get when you run on the dry sand on the beach. You know how you get tired very easily because your muscles actually have to work harder to provide the same amount of propulsion as if you worked on a surface that was a little firmer, that gave you something to push against. So the problem with these surfaces with very low shear strength is that the muscles have to work harder, so they get fatigued more easily or more quickly. And when the muscles are fatigued, then it puts more strain onto the soft tissues that are supporting the distal joints. So surfaces that have high shear strength would be our hard surfaces, concrete, asphalt, packed clay. Again, these don't allow the toe to dig in, don't allow the toe to rotate into the surface as the horse is pushing off. Whereas some surfaces like deep, dry sand or just shavings, this is a picture of a horse working on an arena of just dry shavings. These certainly allow the toe to dig in, but they don't give that strength, enough shear strength for the foot to push off correctly. A friend of mine in Holland, Dr. Sloot, did a study with vaulting horses. And in Europe, it tends to be that the vaulting horses, the vaulting competitions, are relegated to some crummy arena out on the back of the showground, and the footing is often not very good. So Dr. Sloot did a study where she put heart monitors on vaulting horses and compared their heart rates when they were vaulting on a nice sort of wood fiber surface versus deep, dry sand. And she found that the sand increased these horses' heart rates by as much as 50%. Now, that's a huge increase in workload. And you know, in some of these horses, it might even have been putting them over their anaerobic threshold. But regardless, that high heart rate is an indication of how hard these horses are working. And the danger of this type of footing that doesn't give the horse something to push off against is that the muscles get fatigued. And when the muscles are fatigued, that's when we run the greatest risk of bowed tendons and pulled suspensories. And I think particularly, you know, when you think of the incidence of suspensory injuries in the hind limbs, specifically in dressage horses, it's probably higher than in most other sports. And I believe that it's fatigue of the deep flexor muscle that's responsible for overloading the suspensories, and especially in horses at higher levels of training that are working with considerable bending of the joints in the haunches. So in summary, our work surface affects performance and soundness. The dangers with hard surfaces are for bone and joint injuries, particularly arthritis. The dangers on soft surfaces are for soft tissue injuries, tendon strains, and ligament injuries.
And our thanks again to Dr. Hilary Clayton, whom will be back with us for the 2015 ADEQUAN USDF Annual Convention when she shares the findings of her latest research on the subject of footing. And you'll find more information about the presenters and the schedule for the education sessions at this year's convention on the website at usdf.org/convention. The convention will, of course, take place at the Rio All Suite Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas from the 2nd through the 5th of December. But before that, our focus this week is on the Kentucky Horse Park for the U.S. Dressage Finals presented by Adequan from November the 5th through the 8th. And you'll find more information again on our website at usdf.org/US Dressage Finals. Whilst you're on the website, be sure to check out all the latest educational information and resources on eTrack, the USDF's online learning center. You can download these podcasts from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app so that you can listen to the show on the go. Until next week, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.